Reporting on politics and public policy is supported by the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University.
Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. House Bill 1108 would prohibit gender identity or gender expression instruction to any student in kindergarten through seventh grade in South Dakota public schools. The bill was up for debate in the State House this morning. We are joined now by Adam Jorgensen and Libby Screen. Libby is with the ACLU of South Dakota. Adam, you're with Sioux Falls Pride, right? Or how should I introduce you?
And the ACLU, actually.
And the ACLU.
Yeah, just with ACLU, yeah.
All right, perfect. So welcome. Thanks for being here. And Libby, let's start with House Bill 1108. This is not the first bill to sort of deal with transgender or LGBTQ folks in the state of South Dakota this year. But tell me a little bit about House Bill 1108, if you would, please.
That is correct. House Bill 1108 is one of four bills that have been introduced so far this legislative session that target or focus on transgender kids and the LGBT community and their rights. House Bill 1108 itself is a very short bill with a very big and unclear impact, right? So what the bill says it would do is bar instruction in schools on gender identity or gender expression. And that's pretty much the text of the bill. But the language of it is so broad that it would affect our schools in so many ways that we don't even really understand. Everyone has a gender, and any reference to gender under this bill would likely be prohibited.
So when you look at social media, people are saying things like, you know, can you say welcome boys and girls? I mean, they're really wondering how intense this possibly could be implemented. But I want to hear a little bit from the folks in PEER today in the House Education Committee this morning and sort of how they are presenting this for conversation. This first bite is from the bill's prime sponsor, Representative Tom Pischke.
So the legislative intent of this bill is to ensure that South Dakota public schools are not teaching and confusing our young children to be more susceptible to this dysphoria. I've heard, as discussions have proceeded in this bill, I've heard some opponents talk to me about, is there a problem in South Dakota? Why bring this legislation? Well, I can't point to anything specifically in South Dakota, but if you look across the nation, there's multiple signs that this is coming.
So I want to start with expanding on this notion about confusing young children to be more susceptible to dysphoria about who they are in gender identity. Adam, let's start with you, because there's some concerns even there with this word of confusion and susceptibility if we talk about gender in school.
Yeah, I think it's kind of clear with this statement, too, that there's not really an issue with this in schools. And you can't really convince somebody to be, you know, transgender or gay or lesbian, bisexual. People just are who they are. And I think talking about it just kind of opens the door to more understanding, which I think some legislators might be lacking, is just an understanding of who these people are and how they live.
Right. So instead of less education, let's have a little more today. Yeah. And that's why we're here. And this is just going to be a frank conversation, because some people do think, you know, they have a child, they see a child one way, mm-hmm. that child expresses themselves in one way, mm-hmm. and then they come home from school, whether that's college or whether that's elementary school, and they start talking to their parents, and their parents say, you know, they were this way until they were influenced by this friend, mm-hmm. or until they were drawn into this world of literature, or until they went to this college, and someone told them it was okay. Mm-hmm. And from the parents' point of view, Adam, they're saying, you know, they were influenced externally outside of this family. Mm-hmm. And what would you say for people who were kind of afraid of that happening and thought that that's really what was the catalyst?
Right. I would say people just need to talk to their children, talk to their family members. Because I came out as gay when I was 7 years old. And there was nobody influencing me, no television show, no person in school. I just knew that I was. And then I told my parents, and they were open about it. You know, they just opened the conversation and said, okay, you know, you're 7 years old, we'll figure this out, whatever. And I think that's what people should do. They should open it up to conversation.
Tell me about that conversation, because 7 years old, that's like mm-hmm. first grade. You're still learning how to read. So what kind of words, what kind of language do you remember, or have you been told that you were, I mean, how clearly do you remember that conversation?
I remember it pretty vividly, because it was a really like pivotal part of my life. And I think it kind of drew me to where I am today at the ACLU to hopefully, you know, empower people to embrace who they are. But I remember talking to my mom and just being like really upset, like, because I knew in some way that it was bad, I got to know at 7 years old why or how I knew that somebody might not like this part of me. Right. You know, and I think that was really sad. So I think growing up in a smaller town may have fed into that. I don't know if I saw something on the news or something about gay people not being accepted. But I think just having that conversation with my mom and her being so warm and welcoming to it was very positive for me. You know, and she wasn't saying like, oh, you should be gay, you should do this. She was just saying like, okay, let's talk about it. How does that make you feel? What are your thoughts?
So this notion of, you know, a child will internalize that it's normal or that it's okay. Mm-hmm. You're saying that a lot of kids are internalizing at a really young age mm-hmm. that it's abnormal and it's wrong.
Yeah.
What do we know about the possible implications of that sort of, you know, feeling that it's a bad part of you? It's these are bad people. These are unholy people, mm-hmm. depending on the message you've received in church or other places. What kind of impact does it have on people, Libby?
Absolutely. It has a very severe impact. And that is part of why we are so passionate about talking about these bills and to fighting against this legislation, because I mean, this year alone, we've had 4 pieces of legislation that very explicitly send the message to transgender kids in this state that there is something wrong with them. We have heard from so many people, parents and children, who and teachers even, who are saying, I'm afraid to even let my kids know that these bills have been introduced because I know how much it hurts them. And that is backed up by science and research and studies. The World Health Organization has looked at this issue, and they have found that 54%, when we're talking about transgender kids, 54% of those with unsupportive families have attempted suicide. On the other hand, when we're looking at kids who have supportive families, suicide rates amongst those children are about 4%. And I don't want to engage in any hyperbole, but for some of these children, this is a life or death issue. And I think what has really motivated us and motivated me is hearing from these families. This morning before the hearing, I got a text message from a woman who is a friend of mine who has a child who is transgender. And she texted and she said, I can't breathe today. I've just been trying to keep my kid alive. Please keep fighting. And that is what we are talking about. That is what these bills do. And that is the conversation we need to be having.
I'm going to bring in another voice, and this is Senator Phil Jensen at the House Education Committee in Pierre this morning, his testimony. And here he's quoting an unidentified mother.
A concerned mother stated, I don't think anyone has taken the time to think about what are the developmental stages of each age bracket and how might that superimpose something that is not natural into their development. That piece to me as a mom is really, really valuable, she says. No one's having that conversation. She added, if physiologists and medical doctors don't quite understand gender fluidity, then why do we try to impose this on people who are just trying to figure out how to tie their shoes?
So again, we're talking about House Bill 1108, which would prohibit gender identity or gender expression instruction to any student in kindergarten through seventh grade. And so let's talk about these developmental stages a little bit. And where do we begin with this notion of, I'm curious how he says, you know, doctors don't understand gender fluidity. I think a lot of us in the world are not fully understanding. Even the word transgender is not the same thing as transsexual. Gender expression might be defined by other people because you're a girl who wears bow ties and a tuxedo to prom. That could be seen as someone else as sort of a masculine gender expression. That girl might be a cisgender, heterosexual girl. So the language here that we use is incredibly important. Libby, do you get a sense in this bill when they talk about gender expression instruction that they are, and then when you hear the lawmakers speak, that they're really talking about transsexual surgeries and hormones and operations, which is different than gender expression and instruction? Do you know that we are all using the same definitions here?
I think it's pretty clear, listening to the testimony today, that we are not all operating from the same glossary of terms. There seems to be a lot of either misinformation or lack of information that our legislators are relying on. You know, we heard in the testimony today terms being used that are not defined, right? Gender identity, gender expression, these things are not defined in this piece of legislation. And we also heard in a lot of the proponent testimony confusion between sexuality and gender and confusion between being transgender or being gay or lesbian or bisexual, these things are not the same. And it seems that many of our legislators are using terms that they don't understand, and they are using these terms interchangeably. And if we're going to be making state law, if we're going to be making state policy, I think the bare minimum we should be hoping for is to actually understand the words we're using and that we're trying to put onto our legal books.
This is Florence Thompson. She testified this morning as well. She is president of South Dakota Parents Involved in Education. She's also a retired school psychologist.
And the children who are most vulnerable to these programs, and they are in fact being groomed, the most susceptible children are those who have been abused, sexually abused, neglected, or who have weak attachments to their parents. So it's the most needy and vulnerable kids who are susceptible to this program.
Adam, you hear fear. Mm-hmm. When we talk about vulnerability, grooming, that's a sexual abuse term.
Yeah.
You know, there's connections in that language to sex trafficking, mm-hmm. sex abuse, and a lot of underlying panic and fear. And I think mm-hmm. you take us back to the first bite that we had from Tom Pischke with, you know, this is coming to our state, almost mm-hmm. as if, you know, there are gay people in Minnesota that are going to come start, immigrating to South Dakota and demanding to be treated in a certain way. What do you think is behind that sort of fear? I mean, you've lived as a gay man for a mm-hmm. long time.
Yeah.
You're young, but but you're vocal about your sexuality. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so people have a feeling they can talk to you. Mm-hmm. What's behind? Is it just,
I think it's a really, blatant lack of understanding, because I've been talking to a few legislators about these bills, and they've came to me because we knew each other before. We grew up together, like in Del Rapids or around the area, and that's where it comes from. They ask me, you know, what are the issues facing these people, the LGBT community? What do they think of these bills? What am I missing? So I think that's important. I think legislators should be reaching out to these populations and saying, like, how can we help you? What do you think of these? And getting input on the people that it's going to affect, right?
Right. And mm-hmm. what sort of thing, how do you answer that question? Mm-hmm. If someone says, how can we help you?
Mm-hmm.
Is it simply a matter of just not bringing legislation that restricts things?
Yeah.
Or is there more work to be done?
I think that's part of it. I think it's voting against these things and bringing these people into the conversation too, right? Like, I think it's bringing trans people to the table, whether that's, you know, coming to a hearing or talking to them, getting them in on something, and getting their perspective, so you can see exactly how it affects them directly. Because as a gay man, I can't particularly speak to that, but as an LGBT person, I can feel, the weight of that collective misunderstanding.
So my brother is gay. He's older. Mm-hmm. He's 50 now. Mm-hmm. He grew up in a slightly different time and a slightly different community than you probably did. And I can tell you, as his sister, there were people who tried to pray the gay out of my brother, mm-hmm. who tried to beat the gay out of my brother, and it has been a long journey mm-hmm. of him trying to explain to people, well, not even trying to explain, trying to exist without being physically assaulted and verbally assaulted. Mm-hmm. Has it been like that for mm-hmm. you? Are we living in a better time? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that when you meet older gay men or women, LGBTQ people who are of a different generation? Mm-hmm. What are they telling you?
It's definitely different. You know, I have some friends that are, you know, in their 60s, 50s, and they tell me about how they never thought marriage equality would be a thing. You know, they never expected to be able to actually marry their partner in South Dakota, let alone nationwide. So it's interesting hearing that and then getting kind of inspired from them and then knowing that, you know, we can all be a part of getting us to where we need to be, I think.
Did everybody in your family come along, beautifully and lovely from the beginning, or did you have struggles with certain family members?
Yeah.
Individual process. I want to talk about the families.
Yeah.
A little bit of kids. Mm. And then, you know, there's one thing to be gay. It's another mm-hmm. thing to say, you think of me as your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I think of me as your son.
Exactly.
Those are big conversations that people need to have, mm-hmm. And they're not easy.
No.
Where do you begin with those kinds of conversations when you meet transgender families? Mm-hmm. What sort of stories are they telling you about some of their journey?
I have heard, I will say, from so many parents, and there are a lot of common threads that I've heard from the parents of transgender kids. They recognize that their children were from a very young age, saying, I want to be a policeman. No, honey, you can be police, but you'd be a policewoman. No, I want to be a policeman. From the age of 3, 7 and on, and sort of the evolution of seeing who children are as they're growing up. And then when children start to struggle and face anxiety and depression and they wonder, how do I help my kid? What is happening? And then I've heard from countless people who have said, and then my kid told me, I think there's something going on. I think I'm actually a boy. And parents, you know, sometimes they struggle a little bit. Sometimes it takes them time to process that. But the common thread that I have found is that parents that hear this from their children want to do good for their children, and they want to help them through this. And it's a co-education, right, mm-hmm. for a parent and a child and a family. And sort of like Adam said, I think opening up that dialogue and saying like, oh, hey, okay, honey, I love you. We will figure this out. And you have a right to be who you are, because what we are talking about with these bills is erasing the identity of transgender people and sending mm-hmm. the message that they don't or they shouldn't exist. And that is so incredibly harmful. And seeing the impact of that on the families that I have talked to, these families that are devastated and questioning, do I stay in this state? Do I leave? Do I have to leave to protect my children? I don't think that that is the state that we want to be. And so I think when you asked what legislators should be doing, and what I hear from people is, don't bring these bills. And when we tell you that these bills hurt us, listen to us, please.
I want to have another voice here, and this is Florence Thompson again. She is president of South Dakota Parents Involved in Education. And this gets back to this notion of really the misinformation and misunderstanding about how transgender and transsexual people sort of even operate in the world. Here's Florence Thompson.
The resulting gender-confused children are being put on puberty-blocking drugs by third grade, cross-sex hormones in fifth grade, and sex change surgeries in junior high. This despite the statistics show that 80% of gender-confused children straighten out while going through natural puberty. So this process is being blocked, and instead they are being medically converted.
And there's that word straighten out, which is used in a variety of, and we talk about language, we talk about the definitions of transsexual and transgender and gender identity and gender fluidity, but sometimes it's the subtle language of you'll straighten out once you get a little bit older. And I remember my brother, you know, once you meet the right girl, this is, you know, it's just, she's going to knock your socks off. and of course he knew, you know, already that there was no right girl,
right.
That he was a gay man, and mm-hmm. that wasn't really going to change. And it was a matter of really letting other people sort of open their hearts and learn. But we get back to that fear of, you know, kids are going to make this decision when they're 7 mm-hmm. Or when they're 10. Mm-hmm. And if we block the information from them, you know, up until 7th grade, mm-hmm. which this bill would intend to do, that somehow they would get over a certain developmental stage and the problem will go away.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
That's kind of that language, like, it's just a phase, right? Like, which is entirely untrue. Like, I didn't straighten out once I went through high school or something. You know, when I was 7 years old, didn't have access to like Facebook or things like that. And I think it just kind of reinstills that people are who they are. And I think people literally are, you know, to loosely quote, I guess, Lady Gaga, as you are born this way. I don't know. I think that's just, again, reinforces kind of the misunderstanding, and that people should open up conversation and go to places like the schools, maybe where they represent, you know. And in Del Rapids a few months ago, which I think Tom Pischke is a representative of, they did something called Challenge Day. And that's where they opened up the conversation to say, you know, who they did the if you really knew me statements. And if you really knew me, you'd know that I'm a trans person living in Del Rapids. And every day I fear for my life, you know, because of legislation, because of bullies, because of these things. And just hearing stories from kids who are 16, 14, seniors in high school, I think that would really move legislators, or hopefully, or get them to understand that these kids are just kids being themselves. And I don't think they're influenced by media or some sort of, I don't know.
And the kid in the princess dress when mm-hmm. he's 5 might not, he might just like a princess dress.
Exactly.
But that doesn't necessarily, you know, say. Let's talk a little bit, Libby, about their parents. Because you could have you know, gay parents, transgender, transsexual parents bringing their kids to school. Another kid asks a question about, you know, their best friend's parents, and now we really can't talk about that. And that gets back to that idea of not existing. If we silence the language around something, then people begin to be invisible in our society. Tell me a little bit about the other legislation that is sort of making its way through PIR right now. This is not the only bill targeted at transgender people.
Yep, you are absolutely right. So there have been four bills total, two of them focusing on the South Dakota High School Activities Association's policy that allows transgender kids to compete in activities and athletics. That bill died. One of them died on the Senate side, which was wonderful. I will say the conversation around that was really wonderful to hear many of the legislators on that committee saying, we shouldn't pass this bill because it's wrong and it hurts people. And I have heard from transgender people, and we have to do right by these kids. That, I will say, was a very beautiful moment. It was a beautiful moment that didn't last long, though, because Bill 1225, which was introduced after the defeat of the Senate bill, would do the same thing. It would eliminate the Activities Association's policy and pretend that transgender kids don't exist, and it would prevent them from participating in activities and athletics. The other bill still out there, which will actually be heard tomorrow morning in the House Health and Human Services Committee, is Bill HB 1205. And it claims to protect parents and guardians from government action or allow them to deny minor children treatment of any kind, including mental health counseling, for kids who say that they think they may be transgender. And again, I think we see a strain through this that we saw in the testimony today, because this bill looks at language like treatment that would induce or promote the child's belief that gender identity is different from the child's sex presented at birth. It talks about healthcare as to be construed broadly. So we're not just talking about, you know, seeing a doctor. We're talking about psychiatry, psychological, and counseling services. And what that does is it erases the existence of transgender kids, and it prevents them from being able to live their lives as who they are. To add insult to injury, it is already completely clear under current law and under the Constitution that every parent has extremely broad rights to decide what kind of treatment and care is appropriate for their children. So this bill doesn't add anything new to what the law and the Constitution already says. It just injects once again the very lives of transgender kids into the public debate.
Do you see positive things coming out of some of these negative conversations? Do you see, you know, I said at the beginning, we're at a particular time in our history. Do you see that in the sense that people are using their voices to sort of talk about who they were in a way that certainly wasn't, I guess I'm revealing that I didn't, when I was growing up, this wasn't something that we talked about. Mm-hmm. It was not an easy transition for my family in all ways mm-hmm. to sort of figure out who my brother was. And are there good things coming? Are people doing good things out of this struggle?
Yes, I do think they are. I will say I wouldn't do this work if I didn't fundamentally believe that we could do better and that we could change things. And when we started having these conversations in South Dakota in late 2014, early 2015, it was a very different conversation even at that point. What we have seen with the introduction of this type of legislation year after year is that transgender people and their families are starting to tell their stories. They are starting to connect with legislators, and they are bringing understanding to their lived reality and how they experience the world. I think it's tragic that this is the circumstance that this has to happen through. I think it's heartbreaking to see the pain in these people's, these families, these children's faces, but there is a silver lining.
Let's close with this, and that is an effective way to communicate with your lawmakers, because it is a deeply personal topic, and people are angry about it. But what is the most effective way to sort of, you know, resist shaming somebody and move toward, you know, opening a conversation? Adam, we'll close with that.
I think law. You mean like lawmakers? How can they reach out to people?
Right.
Okay, I think it's just literally going in communities like high schools, going to events, maybe like...
Oh, I'm sorry, I meant people reaching out to their lawmakers.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay,
how do you communicate
sorry.
With that without, you know, because it is such a personal thing. Mm-hmm. How do you sort of most effectively advocate? Mm-hmm. is my question. Yeah.
I think a great way to get connected is tactically via email, via phone, share your story in a positive way. Even like me sharing about my mom, you know, really connecting with people. We all have that special person in our life who I think could help us advocate that as well. And even bringing them into the conversation and using your connections that you have in the community. If you are friends or neighbors with a legislator, calling them up and saying, hey, let's have this conversation. This is how it affects me and my community. And this is what I've heard from other people down the street, you know, bringing them into the conversation and making it more personal, because I think politics are pretty personal.